Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is time for Dear Science. How are you, Marcus?
I'm good. Welcome to level three.
Level three. What's that look like for you?
Very little different from level four, to be honest.
Do you guys, uni has or continued or is starting again?
Well, we're starting to teach, but it's all online. So I'm having to lecture to my computer screen and record it all. And the students just listen to it off in their own time.
Oh, wow. So no interaction.
No, well, I mean, we have a few sort of Skype calls and Zoom calls or whatever they're called. But the key word is asynchronous learning. That's the buzzword for the rest of the semester.
Asynchronous learning. I like it. Or maybe I don't.
Well, we'll see. See if the kids like it.
It'll be interesting to see what, how that, I think, because that could be really difficult for some people and it could work well for others. So that's going to be a tough one to monitor.
It is. And there's been big issues about equity, you know, and people not having the right computers and the right equipment and the right network connection and things like that. And I know AUT, and I'm sure University of Auckland, have done quite a lot to try and address that. But that's been a big deal.
Okay. Well, I wish you all the best along with the students. Let's talk about oxygen levels.
Yes, let's. So there's a bunch of surprises in how people react to this coronavirus. And one of them is that infected patients are seeing really low blood oxygen levels, which is called hypoxia. And yet they're able to chat with their doctors and they seem fairly comfortable and not really feeling the sort of the shortness of breath that other people with hypoxia get. And so normally we have about 95% plus blood oxygen saturation, and probably many people have had the little finger devices that clip onto your finger and measure blood oxygen.
Yeah.
And it's normally in the high 90s. And if you get something like pneumonia, your blood oxygen levels start to drop, and your lungs start to fill with fluid a little bit. They get stiffer, and there's rising levels of carbon dioxide because the lungs stop working properly and can't expel it properly, and so you feel short of breath. But for many of these coronavirus patients, that feeling of shortness of breath, even though the oxygen levels are lower, that feeling of shortness of breath just isn't there.
So that means they're sort of, that's a symptom, would it be? That somebody is like experiencing, or they're asymptomatic?
Right.
Is that
right? Yeah, exactly. And the carbon dioxide levels can be normal, and the lungs are inflating normally. But when they use that little finger device and measure the blood oxygen levels, it can be in the 70s, 60s, 50s, or even lower than that. And it's akin to, you know, climbing a really high mountain.
Right.
When the atmospheric oxygen level is lower, you don't feel that shortness of breath. You just start to feel really groggy, I guess. And this is starting to be recognized as a really major feature of severe COVID-19. And so what people are starting to think, or doctors are starting to think, is the cause is that the disease seems to induce clotting. So you get subtle clotting might begin early on in the disease in the lungs, and this could be linked to an inflammatory reaction. You know, you've got a fine web of blood vessels in your lungs, and the inflammatory reaction could promote the blood to clot, and that prevents it from getting properly oxygenated. Okay, and so there's a whole sort of bunch of descriptions, case descriptions of this. But there's one example here: is a woman who had breathing troubles, and it coincided with circularity problems in her toes. And the woman was given heparin, which is a blood thinner. And her toes recovered, but also her breathing recovered as well. So that sort of links it to this clotting. And so some of the doctors who are working on this have wondered whether heparin could actually boost patients' low oxygen levels, and when they're not really struggling to breathe.
Right. Yeah.
And so.
So that could be something that supports somebody in fighting the virus once they've already got it.
Exactly, exactly. And instead of going straight to intubation and you know, assisted breathing, ventilators, simpler interventions such as heparin or sometimes flipping patients onto their belly, which can open up the lower lungs, can also be sort of quite an effective treatment rather than just sticking a tube down someone's throat and forcing them to breathe with a ventilator.
Wow. So that intubation or the yes. ventilators, that's when somebody is in quite a serious condition, right? They're in a critical condition, which can be, you know, closer to a more fatal outcome.
Exactly. Exactly. I believe so, yes. And these little finger devices are pretty cheap. People can actually buy them quite easily. And it's really easy to measure your blood oxygen saturation. Doctors are wondering whether maybe, you know, this is a good way of early detection. As your blood oxygen level starts to drop, you may not feel very different. You certainly don't have any difficulty breathing. But if your blood oxygen level starts to drop into the 80s or lower, then some doctors are advising you get to the hospital and they can give you blood thinners like heparin to try and thin out your blood and stop this sort of early onset clotting, which is sort of an early sign of the disease.
Wow. Okay. That is fascinating. Thank you, Marcus.
Yeah. No worries.
Let's talk about our second story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chloroquine hype derailing other drug trials. What's this about?
Yeah, so this is linked to something I know you're going to talk about later. And you know, there are a lot of people interested in trying to find... So there's two big pushes here. There's the push on one side to try and find a vaccine, which I think is a more long-term goal. And there's the push for just to treat the illness once people have it. And there are a lot of studies and a lot of doctors trying to figure out if their particular favorite drug is going to be effective or not. And so there's examples of when people get sick and go into the hospital, many hospitals are running a series of trials, sort of different drug trials. And when they get to the hospital, patients are presented with almost like a menu here. You could be on this trial or this trial or this trial. And they're all presented sort of tried to be presented in an unbiased way. But it's clear that most people are opting for trials involving one particular drug that's been mentioned quite a lot, and that's hydroxychloroquine, which has been touted obviously by Donald Trump and other international and influential figures as an effective treatment. And so even though there could be a whole list of trials, very few of the trials that don't involve hydroxychloroquine are getting enough patients. So there is this big bias because this drug has been hyped and it's been talked about a lot on the news and by international figures that the studies of any other drug that are enrolling at all ages and degrees of severity are in big trouble.
Because they're not getting enough kind of resources put behind them.
Well, they're getting the resources. It's just that people who are coming to the hospital and being asked to go on trials I've heard about chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine, and they think, okay, well, Donald Trump told me that was going to work, or the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, told me that it was going to work, or right. some figure, and so I'm going to go on that one. I don't want this one where this drug I've never heard of that may not work. And this is a problem because there is and people are obviously desperate, and when people are desperate. And they have a shred of sort of hope that something might work. They're just going to grab onto that, and hopefully in the hope that it actually does work.
Right. Okay. So it kind of messes with the whole process, though. It's almost like if you had, it's not a great example, but if you had like a court trial, and that's why there are certain things that are confidential or not, you know, like name suppression or something, so
yes.
as not to mess with the process.
Exactly right. Right. Yeah. So if you know, one of the suspects is, or some of the evidence is leaked or something like that, even if it's not been confirmed, yeah, it could lead to bias.
And particularly so, because there has been such a concern around chloroquine not necessarily being the best option, actually.
Well, this is it. So there's been a few studies on chloroquine and sort of hydroxychloroquine. They're sort of related. I mean, these are anti-malaria drugs, and they have some anti-inflammatory properties. So there is, you know, there's some scientific basis as to why they might be useful. And in some autoimmune disease, such as rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, they're potentially useful. And early on in February, some researchers showed that they could reduce coronavirus infection of human cells grown in the lab. So these weren't patients, these were cells.
Right.
Some studies in China came out, and there's been some small studies since then, but none have shown definitively whether chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine can benefit COVID-19 patients. Yeah. Mm. Some are shown to be mildly helpful, some have actually shown to be harmful. So it's absolutely not clear. But the problem is Trump and others have been banging on about how these drugs could be really helpful. And Trump actually said that he considered taking chloroquine as a precautionary measure. And then as soon as he said that, hospitals in Iran, in New York, in Spain, and in China started turning to chloroquine as a standard therapy, despite guidance from the World Health Organization that the drug shouldn't be used except in clinical trials.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So demand for the drug has soared, both in the US and outside the US, and this has led to global shortages. So people who actually need it to treat autoimmune disease things have struggled to access supplies. And there's also been reports of illnesses and deaths linked to chloroquine overdoses in the US and also in Nigeria. The whole thing is been sort of almost poisoned by the hype that this drug has received.
So the key kind of message here is there is a lengthy drug trial process for a reason?
Yeah, yes. I mean, we can't pick favorites before we have the evidence. Yeah. And I think some of these international figures, and it wasn't just Trump, it was others, but he's an easy scapegoat.
So it's that irresponsible hype.
And the problem is now doing fair drug trials has become really hard because, for instance, let's say you've got a group of people that doctors want to trial a particular drug that's not chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine, very few people are enrolling. But also, the people who do enroll could be biased towards people who can't take chloroquine for some medical reason. So if you've got high blood pressure or something like that, you can't take chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine. So that population of people could be then turning to these other drug trials, and therefore making those drug trials less valid because they are already focusing more on a subpopulation. Yeah.
Oh dear.
So this, you know, what seemed like sort of a throwaway comment or comments by Trump and others has turned into a big problem because we have to figure out now it's really important. We have to figure out the chloroquine problem, whether that's effective or not, absolutely definitively before we can really move on and study these other drugs. So what it's done, in fact, is actually delayed. The development of treatments, effective treatments.
Well, that's some really positive news. Thanks, Marcus.
Sorry.
But a very a good discussion. And I would like to say, though, it's probably not really a throwaway comment from certain people. There's definitely been people doubling down.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's some people with sort of vested interests.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Marcus. That's all we've got time for today. Thank you for joining us.
Enjoy the rest of the show. It seems to be a COVID-19 show today.
A little bit, yeah. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Bye.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.